Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much and welcome back to our next session of the podcast. Today, I'm excited to welcome Jesse Perez to the show. Jesse is founder and CEO of Sportcore Events. Welcome, Jesse.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Sportcore Events, a company that's doing something generally different in the professional development space. I'm very excited to tell all of you about it. Sportcore uses theater, improvisation, and storytelling to help STEAM build psychological safety, authentic trust, and real connection at work. What makes Jesse's perspective so interesting today for all of our audience, everybody listening, is where he actually comes from. He has been performing since he was 8 years old. He has been a director, he has been a producer, and this is one of my favorite parts of the story. He actually worked as a standardized patient, role-playing as a fake patient to teach doctors real empathy. Think about it. He was literally training medical professionals on bedside manners through performance. He also worked with McKee Consulting, helping businesses create culture shifts through behavioral change, and he spent time at Ansonet, which for those who don't know, is a major contact center operation. So Jesse has actually been inside our world. And Jesse, I always wanted to really ask you this. How did the idea of Sportcore actually came in?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. So I always like to describe myself as an accidental entrepreneur. because I never sought out to start a company. Basically, what happened, my company started the way that every company starts. I got into a fight with a roommate. It was the middle of the pandemic, and we had a disagreement, and I had nowhere to go to kind of process my feelings. We had tiny walls. You all remember what the pandemic was like. And so I ended up going for this walk. And I was walking around my neighborhood and I was walk dancing around my neighborhood. And I literally was like, I probably look like an absolute fool right now, walk dancing around my neighborhood. And I happened upon this parking lot. And this parking lot, it's called the Paul Smith Pink Wall. If anyone lived in LA or lives in LA and knows it, it's constantly like flooded with influencers. And I always lived right by there. Never been an influencer, proud to say, but I had always seen it and been like, okay, cool, that's there, amazing. And for the first time in my life, I walked by and it was empty. And I had all of these feelings and I didn't know what to do with them. And I've been a performer my whole life and I thought, why don't I take this moment? And so I stepped into the spotlight, parking lot lights, and I performed for 6 minutes for no one. And it was like a lightning bolt went off. Something inside me was like, I've been performing my whole life and somehow I never realized the power of performing for yourself, of not doing it for applause or agents or representatives. And so that's kind of how everything started. I set out to build a space for my friends to feel seen, heard, and valued for their own stories, to not feel judged in their performance, to remember why they love to create. And that was a lovely thesis and is still one of the cruxes of why I created it. But as I started to run these sessions, another thing happened that I didn't expect, which is that people would stay at these sessions 2-3 hours after they were over. They're becoming best friends. They're becoming roommates. And I'm like, what's happening here? Why are these people who did not know each other instantly bonding? And I realized that what was happening was that in a very quick amount of time, they were learning very deep similarities and alignments about each other's stories, immediately feeling seen and connected, and then instantly turning that into deep relationships and friendships. And one day we were all together, and one of my friends who's a lawyer was like, God, I wish there was something like this for work. And I thought about it, and I never connected my professional development background with my acting background. And I thought about it, and I was like, of course people at work need to feel seen, heard, and valued. And as I started to do more research and I learned more about the nature of psychological safety and how it's the number one studied thematic in team dynamics, being that people at work feel comfortable taking risks, they feel comfortable sharing authentically, and they feel comfortable being in an environment where they can make mistakes and learn and grow and not be judged by them. Theater does all three of those things. It requires you to take risks. It requires you to share authentically from your own experience. And it requires you to be in an environment where you may not be perfect or the best, but there's no actual risk. So I thought maybe there's something here. And so I spent the next year developing that. I developed it with my team, and then one of my best friends who has a master's degree in organizational leadership, who looked over everything and dotted my I's and crossed my T's and make sure everything was up to industry standards. And then when we went to beta test, the one-off program, the number one piece of feedback I had was, what's next? And I was like, what do you mean? This is a one-off experience. It's lovely. You all feel great. Have a lovely day. And they were like, no, you want to create long-lasting change, we want to be back with you, which is the best feedback to get in a beta test. And so that's when we created our learning journey. So we always say everybody starts with that first initial session, and then you move on to one of our learning journeys. And we do year-long learning journeys. Some are quarterly, some are once every other month, some are every month. And it really solidifies in the discoveries and the work. And then all of our programming is customizable. Entirely customizable to what the teams need. And in that way, it really keeps that aliveness of theater, that theater can be whatever you need it to be and can serve whatever purpose. And I really want people to understand that theater can be this really powerful tool for transformation. It's not just this one specific thing of like, oh, getting you over the fears and like improv. It can also be for opening up or developing tangible skills and all of these things. So yeah. Kind of spark notes. That's how I went from being an artist in an empty parking lot to a business owner working with large companies.
No, but this is an amazing story. Think about it. Creating a judgment-free space where people can come at, drop the mask, be authentic, be real, and connect with people without being, you know, judged.
Yeah.
That's exactly what, you know, a workspace needs. So, Jesse, I am actually very excited to know more about this. I do have a question. So how can improvisation help leaders become effective in managing team, improving customer experience? Like, you know, while you were going through this, your story, I was kind of thinking about it, connecting that to the work and kind of trying to understand how people might actually benefit from it at work drastically. And I would love to know more from you.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're specifically speaking about like leaders or like customer experience, is that correct?
Yes.
I think often this is like a little bit of a misnomer for what I do, because I think many in the world have heard how improv can help in these spaces. But I want to expand that to how can theater help in these spaces? I think what improv does is it helps you think on your feet and be more confident in the room and take risks. But there is a second layer to that, which is the layer of theater that allows for openness and authentic sharing. And I always describe it like this. Think about the situation where you're at a party and you're standing in a circle with a bunch of people you don't know. And then all of a sudden someone tells you a story that you resonate with. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I want to know more. I want to talk to this person more. I want to get to know them. We don't often have those spaces in the workplace. Kind of the water cooler conversation is in a lot of ways a thing of the past. A lot of communication takes place over text and messaging apps. And we don't get that in-person moment to actually see someone as a full-fledged human. The work that we do uses activation and storytelling prompts to give people the opportunity to open up and share authentically, often about the same topic. And what often happens is that you realize that your story is actually much more similar to your bosses or your coworkers that you were feeling disconnected to or unaligned with. And then you start to put pieces together and you go, oh, well, maybe the reason that they were frustrated about that is because we both have this long-held belief that people should be on time, but we were showing up in different ways. And now we can have this more authentic and honest conversation because we now both come from the same root of trust. But the problem is you can't just ask business people to jump in and like share authentically at that level immediately because there's walls up and there's defenses. And so improv and games like that help to let us open up in a more playful, light touch way. And I think the real key of what we do is it's a slow touch to that opening up. So as we ask, less of you as a performer. We ask more of you as a person. And everything that we do is challenged by choice. We give you the storytelling prompt. You choose what you share. But everybody in the room is sharing. So, and oftentimes it starts with the leader. We have the leader share first. They create the environment. They create the openness. And everybody goes, okay, I can do this. And then what happens is that the stories start to get deeper and people resonate and they connect. And before you know it, you have people being like, oh, I really relate to that. Or they'll start their share and they'll be like, actually, mine is kind of similar to John's or whatever. And I think that's why our satisfaction rate is so high, is because I don't know if you spoke about this or we talked about this before the podcast, but like we have a 94% satisfaction rate on our programming. And I think the reason for that is because everything is challenged by choice. Everything is what you want to share, what you choose to share. But as you start to have fun, as you start to open up, which is what theater and improvisation and all of these catalysts can do, you begin to be more connected. And I think as a leader, the more that you create that environment where people can open up and share, where work can be fun and engaging and all of these things, the more you feel like your boss actually cares about you holistically as a person. And that's what's going to cause you as an employee to stay engaged, to stay committed. There's a really interesting study by Gallup that actually says one of the things that causes people to stay at work is if they have a best friend at work. So the more you feel connected to people at work, the more likely you are to stay at work, the more likely you are to stay engaged. And that skill that you have of getting people to open up as a leader is the same skill you can use with your customers. Customers want to trust you. They want to believe that you have their back, that you, and doing things like theater and improvisation gives you the ability to know how to open up in that way that is still business professional, but allows you to create those bonds that can really move the needle for you as both a leader and as somebody working with customers.
Jesse, love that. In fact, when you were saying that, I was thinking about, you know, I started in this industry 13, 14 years ago as an agent. And then, you know, from there on, I went into training. I've been into every role possible in a training department. Then I've been to every role possible in operations, then quality, then product, and then here I am today. And while you were saying this, I was recalling a conversation that I just had with a customer yesterday, where they were talking about how to retain behavior-based training better. Now with AI, you don't really have to worry about knowledge retention anymore, right? It's more about behavior retention. You don't have to worry about an agent remembering the entire SKU list, prices, and all of that. AI will help that on real time. But how to help a customer? That behavioral-based training, that retention is important. And when we look at your numbers, 94% participation satisfaction, 92% reporting, people actually reporting a stronger connection with team. And I'm quite sure it's also resulting in a much better retention of everything that they are learning, because the entire goal is to give them that experience. Is that resulting into a deeper impact compared to traditional training methods?
Just making sure I understand your question. So you're saying that like culture offers a deeper experience. You're saying, is the methodologies we're using a part of what makes that experience deeper?
Yes. And so just to add some more context. So when you look at traditional coaching, you know, in organizational companies right now, there is somebody who is speaking on the stage. They are giving you, you know, there is a PowerPoint somewhere. They're telling you what you should do. And it's more like an inspirational or motivational speaker who's just telling you things, but you are focusing on experience more. So are you seeing that people, react better to it? What are some impacts you are seeing, and what are some things that you see working basically?
Yeah, 100%. I think that kind of the number one thing in speaking to that is the concept of we often say people will forget what you say, but you will remember how they made you feel. And I think that's, yes, a lot of what we look at when we look at motivational speakers and when we look at a lot of these things. But oftentimes, sometimes, like, I think of it a little bit like a runner's high. Like, you know, you get that motivational pop of inspiration, and then you come back to work on Monday and that can dissipate. And I definitely think there is an element of that to what we do. That's why we, you know, built in these like longer learning journeys. But I think what's so specific about what we do, and specifically about that interaction, interactive portion that you spoke to, is that you are getting a hands-on practice at all of these things. So as well as getting like hands-on practice with all of these like theatrical things, these games and these storytelling prompts and these, where you're practicing kind of overcoming that fear. You're not just conceptually being like, we can do it. We are like, no, we're saying like, hey, get out there. Here's your sock puppet. Go create. But I think what's different is that, again, everything is sourced from them, right? So if I'm asking you to create a share and I'm asking you to create it in this medium, I'm giving you a prompt that then you're creating off of. You're going to remember what you talked about, what you created, what you generated. And then on top of that, almost every single section that we do, every single section we do is paired with research. So it's like it's a little bit like left brain, right brain, right? So your creative brain people are going to often get it in the activity. They're going to feel it. They're going to be like, okay, I feel the transformation from this game or this storytelling activity. And I understand how I can put this immediately into work. And then you're going to have your people who are like, I don't understand why we're doing this. And that's when we pair it with research and real world application. So, okay, I'll give you a concrete example. We often open with something I call an icebreaker like you've never seen before. And so it's going to be an icebreaker, but it's going to be specific to a skill that you want to work on. And for instance, I think a big thing, you know, right now, a lot of people are dealing with is adaptability. Adaptability when it comes to AI, adaptability and being open to different things. So we have a game called Wrong Household Object. The game is I give everyone 30 seconds to grab an object. And then I say, hey, this is actually the key to cooking your favorite dish. And you're going to explain to us why it is. The only rule, it can't be used the way it actually is used. So then they give these delivery, these monologues. One, it's unique and specific enough. You're not going to forget that time you talked about how you make burritos with a pen. You're just not. It's specific. It's weird. But then we're going to take that and give you an actual research example and say something like, you know, as AI is growing in your organization, this same adaptability can be used in this way. And now we're going to take the playful and make it tangible. And we're going to do an activity that's hands-on that gives you the opportunity to touch the work that we're kind of speaking about metaphorically so that you can kind of do this synthesis processing of taking something that's fun and is locked in because it's weird and engaging and connects to you. And then we move it to something that is locked in and real and concrete that you can take with you. And I think that that kind of process is really unique to what we do in that it takes in exactly what I said, in that it takes something non-tangible and turns it into something that you can immediately input into your business and you can immediately track.
That makes perfect sense. And when you think about it, that helps you not only retain information, as you were saying, but it helps you build that habit as well. The habit of, you know, being able to adapt and, you know, how to do it. So that's amazing, actually. And when you said this, I was actually thinking about this and I would love to know your opinion as well. So, let's take the same approach. And now let's think about customer experience or contact center worlds. How can teams be more confident, adaptable, and empathetic by using the exact same methodology? If you were to give one nugget of wisdom to every listener right now who is from contact center or CX world, what is one thing that they can do from today that will help them be more adaptable, basically?
Mm-hmm. One thing they could do today to help them be more adaptable. I actually think, especially if you're talking to leaders and if you're talking to young leaders, I think that the thing that you often maybe like don't notice when it comes to adaptability is how resistant people are. I think it's very visible how resistant people are to adaptability. I don't think I'm reinventing the wheel by saying that. But what I do think is interesting is that oftentimes when we are trying to adapt someone to something, we'll just be like, just get it. Just we're kind of trying to drill it into their head. Just shift. Just what you need to actually be dealing with is the resistance, not the actual situation at hand. And the thing is that the key to the resistance is not often, in my experience, to ask them why they're resisting, because you're going to keep them down the path of what's in the gap for them. What you want to do is you want to bring them to an alignment that you both see. So in terms of adaptability, I might say something like, okay, and I'm really putting on my like employee engagement hat for this as opposed to my theatrical hat, but I think, you know, we really want to move them down the line of like, what do we both see? So, okay, if this is an employee who really cares about the company and they're passionate about their work, I'm going to say, can we both agree that we want the best for this company? And if they can go, yes, then it's about is that trust build. So then it's genuinely, and I stress this, only ask these questions if you can back them up with a reliability. But the second question I would probably ask is something like, do you trust me to do not only the best thing for you, but for the company as a whole? If they say yes to that, then you're in a good position, because now they see they want the same thing as you and they believe in you, which means the next thing you're going to present to them, even if they have resistance, they now have this new space for interest and value in this thing that they didn't before. So then, for instance, if the next thing that says that you say to them is, we're instituting this new program, and I really think it could help you transform in these ways, do you believe it could do that? So you don't want them to say it will, because it's still resistant. But if you can get them to, it could. And oftentimes people will try to move out of it. They'll be like, well, it might not. Can you just agree that it could? And usually they'll be like, okay, it could. And then you can get them to move even a little bit and be like, could you try it for a week? And then we can meet and discuss it. Now, if you're a bigger operation, that might be a little harder. There might have to be, you know, more of an automated check-in. But even at a large operation, most people have supervisors, and most supervisors have between, you know, 10 and 20 people at some level. And so usually there is someone who can check in with that person. And so basically what you're doing is you're really incrementally moving them over by creating a shared alignment. And that shared alignment can transform adaptability.
That's amazing, Jesse. I'm going to actually take that and make sure I practice it. And I'll come back to you on the results as well.
But amazing.
One thing, thank you. One something important that I really wanted to ask you today, and this literally keeps me up at night. When you think about where the AI has reached at ETS Labs, we are doing so many things with AI, you know, literally changing the way contact center used to operate. There is a element of humanity as well as safety there. I would love to know, what do you think about, how can humans work with AI and do it safely? What are some AI safety guidelines that we should focus on? And just a little bit more about this from
you. Yeah, absolutely. I think probably the first place to start with that question is to address the elephant in the room, which is that people are afraid of losing their jobs. As someone in leadership, I'm sure you know that more than anyone. The most fascinating thing, though, is that even though there is a large number of companies claiming they're doing layoffs and all these things because of AI, the amount of companies that have actually fully replaced employees with AI is 9%. It appears to be so much bigger because a lot of companies are saying they're doing it because it looks better for their stockholders. It's easier for them to say in a room. But the real truth is employees are not replaceable. They're not. They're not at this time because the AI is not there yet. And so if employees are not replaceable, my number one thing to business owners, to leaders, is to be honest, is to say, hey, I know that you're scared about this. We are bringing this AI in because we want it to assist, but we are going to train you and develop you so you can stay with the company as we utilize this AI. If that's the truth, the thing about making these kind of commitments, you have to practice what you preach. So if you say like, your job is safe and their job is safe. So you have to say these things with a grain of salt. with all that understanding that it's only the 9%, then it really comes the conversation of you still really need to invest in your employees. It is not, we are not in this, you know, we've seen the dot-com bubble come and burst. This is the newest bubble, you know, and what our job right now is as people who invest in people, because I think also from a heart-centered place, I can say, I think a lot of us got into business because we care about people. We want to see people succeed. And even though we care about the bottom line as business owners, there is a part of us that wants to grow and develop people. But that's not every business owner. And I think I can't sit in that. But what I can sit in is that every business owner is losing dollars and cents by saying these things to their employees. Because you're saying that you're firing them for AI. You are firing some of them not for AI. You're depleting the morale of the entire team. And then everybody is afraid and walking on eggshells. And fear is not a way to lead. Fear is only a way to lead if you want no input from your employees, if you want no thoughts from them, and if you want no openness from them. And they'll most likely be doing the bare minimum because they're afraid of getting fired. And we have seen and studies have shown that the most successful teams are the ones with trust and psychological safety. There's a study that Google did called, I think it's called Project Aristotle, which actually found this exact fact. So if you want to look into that metric, and yeah, understanding all that, invest in your people, do professional development, do team building, because your team is the thing that is helping everything thrive. So make sure that you're investing in them.
That's, Jesse, when you said that, I was actually thinking about the moment that made you, you know, start SportCop, as you were saying earlier, because you found a moment to express yourself authentically. You went back and you said, hey, you know what? Nobody was there really to judge me. And then you created this for the teams, for people, a space where people can feel safe to say things like, hey, this isn't really working. I have a better idea. Or, you know, maybe tomorrow or Monday when we are off in the office, we're going to look at it different. And when you do that, you improve not only your customer's experience, but your overall organizational trajectory as well for the company, for yourself. And Jesse, this has been a really energizing conversation. For anyone who wants to learn more about what you do, tell us, where can we find you?
Sure, absolutely. So you can find me as Jesse Puddles on LinkedIn. You can find my company at spotcorpevents.com. And we do team building and employee engagement for teams, as well as we have our leadership program, which we just launched for the invisible challenges of leadership. So if you're a leader who's been feeling burnt out or disconnected, or you lead a team and you're supposed to be confident, but that confidence isn't translating internally for you, I would also love to connect with you about that. And that is also done with private coaching. So both of those opportunities, we'd love to have you. And again, Spot Corp Events or Jesse Puddles is my name. You can find me on LinkedIn.
Thank you so much. So, and also we will have the website link in the podcast description, team, spotcorpevents.com. If you, as you heard from Jesse, if you want to engage more, experience behavior more, or, you know, if you're just burnt out and you want to actually have some private coaching, Jesse or spotcorpevents.com is the right place to reach out there. Thank you so much for being here, man. I really appreciate it. This was an amazing conversation.
Thank you, Manu. I really appreciate it.